So last Sunday, I posed this question to you. What is God calling you to do? We were looking at that passage from Exodus where God calls Moses from the burning bush. The Israelite people had resided in Egypt for generations. However, for three centuries, they had been enslaved and forced to build cities for the Pharaoh. During this time, Moses is born. He is a child of the Hebrews. But one day, he encounters an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. And Moses intervenes and kills the Egyptian and hides the body in the sand. Because of this, Moses is forced to flee the country. So he heads across the wilderness to the land of Midian. There, in Midian, he marries a daughter of the priest of Midian and goes to work for his father-in-law as a shepherd. One day, while shepherding far from Midian on the slopes of Mount Horeb, which we also know as Mount Sinai, Moses experiences a theophany. God appears before him as a burning fire in the midst of this bush. And from this fire, God informs Moses that yes, God has heard the cries of the Israelites in Egypt. And God intends to send Moses to convince the Pharaoh to allow his people to leave. Theologically, we view this as God calling Moses to go to the Pharaoh. In our reading for today, Moses expresses his reluctance to follow God's call. Moses argues, saying, "But what if they don't believe me or listen to me? What if they say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'? What then?" Well, frankly, these are legitimate concerns, aren't they? I mean, who among us doesn't get a little suspicious when someone shows up telling us that their plans are based on what God has ordered them to do? We get a little suspicious. I'm reminded of the great insight by the comedian Lily Tomlin, who many years ago said, "Why is it that when we talk to God, we're said to be praying? But when God talks to us, we are schizophrenic." Moses is worried that he is going to go back to his people with this big plan from God, and they're going to laugh him right back out of town. So, in response to Moses' doubts, God arms Moses with some powers that he can use to get the people's attention. First, God asks Moses what Moses is holding in his hand. And Moses tells him it's a staff. God instructs Moses to throw the staff on the ground. Moses does so, and the staff transforms into a snake. Pretty cool. God instructs Moses to grab the snake by the tail. And when Moses does so, the snake reverts to being a staff again. Secondly, God tells Moses to put his hand inside of his cloak. Moses does so, and when he pulls his hand out, it is white and looks like it has leprosy, which is a terrible skin disease. And that's not so cool. Ugh. But God tells him to put the hand back into the cloak, and the hand is returned to normal. Third, God informs Moses that if these two powers don't work, that he can take some water from the Nile River and pour it out onto the dry ground, and the water shall become blood. Now, in my opinion, none of this is very impressive. At best, these are second-rate parlor tricks. You know, the kind you might see at a kid's birthday party when the clown that you hired cancels, but sends his brother-in-law who is getting into magic. These are not powers worthy of the Lord, but they're not intended to sway the Pharaoh just to get the attention of the Israelite leaders. And it doesn't really matter because Moses never needs to deploy these tricks. Moses is just afraid that no one will listen to him or believe him, that no one will accept this divine commission. So, to make him feel better, to make him feel more confident, God arms him with these magic tricks. Moses is still not convinced that he is capable of heeding God's call. So Moses throws out a second objection, arguing that he is a poor public speaker. He says, "Lord, I have never been eloquent, not in the past, and not even now talking with you. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." According to Moses, if God is looking for a new spokesmodel, then God has the wrong guy. But God reminds Moses that he need not worry about this, because the ability to speak, well, it comes from God. Who gives speech to mortals? Who makes them mute or deaf, seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Go, God tells Moses. Go, I will be with your mouth and teach you what you are to say. Nevertheless, Moses, still not convinced, continues pleading, "Lord, please send somebody else." At this point now, God's had enough. And somewhat testily, he says to Moses, "All right, what about your brother Aaron? He speaks well. Here's the plan. I will speak to you, and you will tell Aaron what to say. Aaron shall speak for you to the public. He shall serve as a mouth for you. Will that work for you?" So, returning to my question from last week, I asked, what is God calling you to do? I believe that God is calling us all to some task, to some ministry. Rarely, it seems, is that call as clear and specific as Moses' call there on Mount Horeb. I mean, it would be really hard to deny the voice of God, as played by James Earl Jones, of course, resounding out of that roaring inferno. We would get the message if God was that clear. Or would we? Would we be more like Moses? I think that every call given from God is like the one to Moses. We think that we are sent out for different tasks and different ministries. But when you boil it down, it's really all the same calling. I want you to stand up to power and demand freedom for the oppressed. That was the message to Moses. And that's the message to all of us. Ministry is about identifying and addressing the needs of the oppressed, of people in pain. Those who are oppressed, well, they may be the poor, or the homeless, the refugee, the victim of violence, the disabled, the minority, the alien, the forgotten, or more. Looking at it in this way, I think that every ministry can be defined as simply confronting the powers of oppression. And that is our call from God. But how many of us, when we receive that call, start making excuses as to why we can't respond? Like Moses, we say, "But what if no one believes me or listens to me?" And we begin to list our weaknesses and insecurities as to why we are unfit. But God does not call the unfit. God's call may challenge you, it may stretch you, but it does not set you up for failure. What we see here, as well as in other places in Scripture, is that God equips us for the task at hand. Moses said, What if they won't listen to me? And God gives him some flashy attention-getting magic tricks, which he never needs to use. And then Moses argues, I'm terrible at public speaking, and God sent Aaron to speak for him. When in reality, Aaron was already there. Aaron is Moses' brother. Aaron would have spoken for him anyway. And later in Scripture, when Jesus sends out the disciples, he provides them with power and authority. As we read in Matthew, then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to cure every disease and every sickness. Jesus gave his disciples power and authority to carry out God's work. Moreover, the greatest promise that God makes here is that God goes with us. As God said to Moses in our reading last week, I will be with you. When you go to the Pharaoh, I will be with you. We are not sent out to minister alone. God is with us. I'd like to finish with a reference to an old movie, a children's movie, in fact. Those of you of a certain age will recall a movie that was made by Disney back in 1975, and it was called Escape to Witch Mountain. It was a huge success for Disney at the time, and they've even had remakes of this movie, including a made-for-TV movie, and then about 10 years ago, one starring Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. According to the reviews, that one is just unwatchable, so don't bother. But go back to the one made in 1975. All these movies are based on a book of the same name by Alexander Key, which was published in 1969, which I recall reading in middle school. And the book is about two children who have exceptional powers. And it turns out that, yes, they are aliens from another planet, and on Earth they are on the run from evil forces that want to profit from their abilities. And in the book, those evil forces are communist. By 1975, when the movie is made, communists apparently weren't as frightening, and so they're replaced by this greedy capitalist. But while on the run, the children are befriended by a man named Jason O'Day. And in the movie, he's just a crotchety old guy rambling around in his Winnebago. But in the book, he's a priest who runs a downtown mission. And at the end of the book, when the evil forces have the children isolated on a hilltop, Father O'Day, who we've been told is a physically large man, he makes a statement of faith that impressed me as a teen, and really it stuck with me all my life. He makes this statement of faith because he understands that his calling is to help those who are in peril, whether they are those who come into his downtown mission or these two strange children. And he understands his God-given abilities. He knows his call, and he knows his abilities. And at the end of the book, there's this passage. For a moment, it looked to Father O'Day as if he might have trouble on his hands. He smiled in sudden anticipation and took a step forward. There were six of them, but the Lord had given him a mighty body, and there was no better spot than a mountaintop for taking on the minions of the devil. As I said, it's a children's book and a children's movie, but in it is this wonderful description of this man who knows his calling and knows what his abilities are. And is willing to use them. Turns out he didn't have to fight. The bad guys just ran away. But we should be reminded from this and the stories in Scripture and the stories that we share with one another that yes, we are called. And when we are called, we are provided the abilities to answer that call. And best of all, when we go, we are never alone. We might go with one another, but we always go with God. And for this, we can be truly thankful.